Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
If you've been listening into our family series over the last few weeks, I'm sure you've been loving what Alan and Helen Meyer have been teaching us. Well, tonight we're going to tackle communication. I want to find out how to develop healthy communication in our families, whether our kids are littlies or rapidly growing teenagers. Alan and Helen, welcome back to Open House.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
This is such an important issue and such a fraught one. You say that communication needs to be modelled for a start.
Yes, it does. And again, we go back to the core cry of the human heart. We're made in the image of a God of everlasting intimacy. The Trinity is the model of intimacy, to be woven so together that the personalities are distinguishable, yet the substance is indivisible. We're made in the image of that kind of a God, and our hearts are really longing for intimacy. And intimacy is intimacy, where you begin to reveal who you are to others, and they can then embrace you as you are because they know more and more of who you are. And so the intimacy is what growing relationships is really all about. And the essence of that is to have communication in which intimacy is possible. Now, there's all kinds of dynamics at work. There's the stairwell of communication, going from just that ordinary level of communication of greeting, like, you know, g'day, how are you, did you sleep well last night, through to the diary level, you know, what are you doing today, oh, I'm going to work, I'll be home at 7 p.m, to then when you get to the more dangerous levels of communication where the potential for conflict occurs, and that's when ideas get on the agenda. Oh, I don't feel like going to work. I don't feel like I should have to go to work. Why not? Well, other people should go to work. Well, now you have the potential for the four barriers to communication. And the four barriers to communication attack the hope that we will be accepted, that we'll be valued, and that we'll feel that we belong. And that is firstly criticism. The moment you get ideas on the table, what do you think about that, son? Oh, I don't know, Dad. The moment he expresses an idea, how do we respond to it?
Mm.
Do we tease it out? Do we help him to explain himself better? Oh, I don't know. I'm barracking for Collingwood. What a stupid idea, son. You know, everyone knows you'd barrack for Hawthorne. Well, criticism is the first of the responses in the communication experience in which you now begin to close the heart. And the second is even worse. That's contempt. What a stupid idea. So when children begin to express their ideas, the question is this a positive environment or is it quickly shut down and dumped on because the ideas are contradictory to what mum and dad hoped you might have? And in healthy communication, both in marriage and in family, the hope is that you'll go beyond the expression of ideas to the open expression of your feelings, and then beyond that to your vision, your hopes, your dreams, your values, because that's where real intimacy is seen. That's where a husband and wife really get to see each other's hearts. That's where kids begin to understand what is it that motivates my mum and dad. And in a healthy environment, it is the drawing out, the helping of kids to explain their ideas and begin to ask the question, why do I think what I think? And is this an appropriate idea? And what do I feel about that? And what are my dreams for life? And what are my great values on which I'm going to build life? That's what healthy communication is all about. The four barriers, of course, is first of all, you criticize as soon as somebody gets an idea or a feeling on the deck. Secondly, contempt. I think that's a stupid idea. That leads to defensiveness, where rather than hearing one another and drawing each other out, we shut one another down and begin to defend ourselves. And then the worst of all is stonewalling or disengaging, where now we shut one another out of our lives. Shut up, Dad. I don't want to hear what you've got to say.
That's the worst, you say.
Then you're in serious trouble. Mm. Then there is no intimacy. Then there is no communion or communication. And for that reason, parents really have to really work to ensure that the channels of communication are not only open, but they are developing in a healthy way and understanding what might sabotage the unfolding of really healthy communication in a family. Things like harsh startups versus soft startups. Learning, what's wrong with you, son? I've walked into your room and I said... So the moment you start with a harsh startup, you create an environment in which real communication is impossible. What's wrong with you, son? Don't you have a brain? Well, of course, Dad, I've got a brain. I mean, all vertebrates have... Shut up, I tell you, smart aleck, I'll smack your face. You start with the harsh startup and it really has nowhere to go. And teaching not only yourself as a parent, but your children to start with respect, to start with questions, to start with a soft opening that allows for communication rather than creating immediate defensiveness or criticism or contempt. And maybe one other thing, the recognition that here's a Bible word, thumas, outbursts of anger, that just stops all hope of real communication. But the opposite end of the anger scale, which is perigismos, the seething anger, where I pretend to keep things happy and smiling, but underneath I'm angry and fuming and I'm not going to tell you what my issues are. That's kind of like laying landmines for the future. All of these are elements of a communication process that the more parents understand it, the more they see these dynamics at work in their own relationship as a marriage, there's real hope for creating an environment for the kids that can make for a great future.
And as we've said before, the more you're prepared to work at it, I think, absolutely, as well. Yeah. You're also big advocates, I know, of the idea of holding a family meeting. What is that and what role can it play for the benefit of a healthy family?
Yeah, I think they're much more needed now than even in the past, where families used to always eat together, so it was kind of an informal thing that used to take place around the dinner table and still can with those families that can manage it. But as a strategy in a home, it is really a wonderful thing because the most important thing about a family meeting is it gives the children a voice. It would be something like meeting once a week, all the family members are together, doing something that's appropriate for the age of the children. And one of the first things that might need to happen is to clear the air where there's been hurt or words spoken during the week and have the children apologise to one another, even have a parent apologise to a child because they might have yelled at them that day or yelled at them during the week or been inappropriate with the way they communicate it. And so the children are having a voice. They're clearing the air with one another. They're seeing parents model forgiveness and acceptance. And it's an opportunity also for children to talk about, well, how is it going for them? What are the problems they're having in the family? What are the things that the conflicts perhaps that are coming up between siblings? It gives them an opportunity to talk about that and perhaps come up with strategies.
Can I ask you this? When would you start the family meeting idea in a family? I wonder whether you'd start it earlier rather than later. So you don't have teenagers and all of a sudden you say, we're going to have a family meeting.
What?
So it's probably something you'd start earlier in their lives.
Ideally, starting when they're younger. Because obviously then you're shaping that as an expectation in the family. But you can still put it in place when children are older. But the most important thing about that is it doesn't become sort of compulsive or they have to be there. And so you may have a child in the family who doesn't want to be part of it. Well, I would force them, but I would still go ahead with the children in the family who are willing to be party to that and around the same things of communication, listening to one another, hearing what the issues might be, but not always about the negative, but praising the children for what they've done well.
Yes, yes.
And it's been our experience that when you have perhaps a teenager who doesn't want to be part of it, as they see it functioning well, as they hear what's happening with the other kids, they will very often join it. And we would say to them, look, any time that you'd like to come and be part of this, we'd love to have you. We don't want to force you.
Yes.
I think with great warmth about one of the iconic Australian movies, The Cast.
I love The Cast.
And I remember walking out of that film with such a glow, and I went back and watched it a number of times after. What did I love so much about it? And one of the things that I loved so much about it was that the father was consistently affirming to his wife, yeah. to his yes. kids, Daryl dug a hole. Come on, tell him, Daryl dug a hole. Good on you, Daryl. And that family environment where every time the family gathered, the role of the parents was a consistently positive one. So that whatever was happening, whatever criticism, that whatever a conflict there might have been, it was very, it was mild, it was tell him he's dreaming, you know. it was mild, but the consistent role of the father was to bring respect to his kids.
And his wife as well.
And it, constantly. Yes. And this is the this is part of the role of the family meeting, that the children realise that they are respected, that their views are respected, their emotions are respected, their role in the family is respected. And respecting them opens their heart to want to connect and to want to listen and to want to be affirmed.
I think it's a great idea.
One thing I would say, that when you've got a family that has high-level conflict in the family, you may need to get a third party involved in that. And that's what we call family mediation, where you'd bring somebody in from the outside who might be a family counsellor or works with families. And by using that strategy, but with a third person who's not actually emotionally involved in the family, you can actually bring some real resolution where there's high levels of conflict.
And that needs to be a professional.
Absolutely.
Yes. So we've already been through some of the barriers to communication in family. Let's finish by tackling some of the elements of what you might think would be healthy family communication. What would you say there?
Well, once you appreciate that there is a stairwell of communication that starts with the greeting phase, and if we really do communicate well, it gets to the place where we hear each other's values and dreams and hopes, then we need to create an environment in which we don't criticise, we draw people out. So asking really good questions. Tell me, what do you think about that, Peter? Mary, what do you think about it? And can you tell us, how do you feel about what Peter said? So that there is this opportunity to draw people beyond the level of ideas safely. So they get the opportunity, even if perhaps we think they're not very good ideas, help them to express them. And then avoid the four barriers. Avoid criticism. If there's a way of presenting a different point of view, usually I statements. Well, the way I have usually seen that, rather than saying you statements, well, you're wrong. You have bad ideas, or you shouldn't feel that way. The way I've dealt with that is this. It becomes I statements. And I statements don't close people down, because it isn't a reflection on them. It's simply the way I have seen it. And so we avoid criticism. We absolutely remove contempt from the communication process. And even when our children challenge us, try not to be defensive. There may be situations in which we not only aren't well able to explain ourselves, we may need to apologise for deficiencies and inadequacies. And when they see that it's safe to say how they feel, and for us to say, well, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware, that creates an environment in which sharing your feelings and sharing your values and your dreams is a safe thing to do. And that takes the disengagement right out of the whole process.
Yes.
The greatest impact that parents can ever have on their children is the level of relationship that they have, because there will come days when really serious decisions have to be made. I'll give you an example. What happens when, for example, a girl falls in love with a guy and you know that this guy does not deserve that degree of emotional commitment, and you can see a disaster looming? In that moment, the degree to which you can influence her future will depend on the quality of the relationship you have built up to that point.
Yeah.
And I will never forget that time my daughter came down to my room with tears in her eyes saying, Daddy, are you sure he's not the right guy? If we hadn't had strong bonds,
of course,
we would never have had that conversation that saved, that changed the direction of her life.
Mm. What golden insights. I'm loving our family series. Alan and Helen Meyer from Careforce Life Keys Thanks so much again for being with us this week. And next week, a look at boundaries.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.